Did you add any notes to the agenda? You did? Okay, fantastic.
Do it again.
Really don't have a lot of respect for the ships on this show.
The bath toys.
The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. We are here tonight to discuss the next three episodes of Rome, entitled Pharsalus, Caesarion, and Utica. These are 7, 8, and 9 of the first season, for those keeping score. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Shane Settner.
Yo!
And a very excited Brian Hartman.
That's me. Second night in a row, for those of you who won't know, this is published for the second night.
There is no chance that these two podcasts will be edited and released within a day of each other. That is absolutely
but they're
not
recorded.
Happen.
Well, inside baseball knowledge.
I'm getting slower at editing, if anything else.
To show you when this was recorded, Trump is still president.
I don't have anything else to add to that. I've got nothing. So we mentioned how excited Brian was. As we continue our journey through Rome, if anything, I think Brian is becoming more endeared to this series than even something like Deadwood. Or I don't know, Game of Thrones isn't in that neighborhood, but I don't really know what other TV shows Brian is crazy about.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
I'm talking about how much you love Rome, the TV series.
It's fine.
Apparent to any listener.
Can we talk about the names of these episodes?
Right? Sure.
Which one gets spelled correctly the most of these three? Utica.
Fair. Yeah.
I mean, even
I don't know how you would fuck that up.
Yeah, I guess. Unless someone said.
Well, there's one T or two, because there's a Utica, Illinois. I think there's two T's.
Because based on my knowledge of The Office, there's also an Utica, Connecticut, somewhere in there. I don't know.
There's only
somewhere up there.
I don't know how to spell.
Cicero, Illinois.
Kind of true. Al Capone's from there.
Ah.
Or
there's also a Wakandia, Illinois. Illinois has everything.
Yeah.
That's two mentions of Wakandia in two podcasts that will not be released concurrently. So,
what's the third episode? What's our next Illinois city we can name?
Caesarion and Pharsalus are the other two episodes. Probably neither of those are a little hamlet in Illinois, in the land of Lincoln.
Caesar, Illinois.
Maybe. I don't know. There's a Peru, Indiana, and a Versailles, Kentucky. So who the fuck knows? Versailles.
Get the fuck out of here.
Dummies. So
it's like they call D-Land, Illinois. D-E space L-A-N-D. And they call it D-Land.
At least they don't call it D-Land, so that's good.
We've got a Peru, Illinois as well. So there you go.
Okay.
Good popular. Midwestern podcast.
Absolutely. Okay, fantastic. So jumping right in, our factions for these three episodes. The conflict that has been driving the season so far, the grand conflict, is essentially over. Like, Caesar's crushed his opponents. He won a surprising victory at Pharsalus in episode 7 against Pompey, despite being outnumbered 3-1. And a year later, he defeats Cato and Scipio at the Battle of Thapsus, and they commit suicide in the city of Utica, which is where the episode gets its name. Fun fact. Cato, who, as depicted in the show and in real life as well, a humorless bastard, his first suicide attempt failed, and it resulted in him being found alive with his guts hanging out, and the doctor tried to force him back in, patch him up, but Cato instead ripped them back out with his bare hands, which did effectively complete his suicide attempt.
You know what? I am not, like, a super morbid person, but they should have, like, given us some of this stuff, because they could not have made these major events in history any less interesting than they managed to do in the show.
As expensive as the show is, that is the chintziest battle scene that has ever existed anywhere, I think, in any media.
Is it worse than...
Try and top it, I mean.
Right, okay, and in season 1 of Game of Thrones... Where the Tyrells come in and they're like, "We've done it. We've won the war. We beat Stannis."
I mean, that comes at the end of like a 30-minute sequence where it is obvious that there are nowhere near as many people as there are supposed to be around, right. And it takes place at night, so you can hide a lot of people in the shadows. But No, it's not as bad as that. No way.
They didn't need to say that.
At least you see, like, people on horses riding through the scrum. Here you just see flags. Flag is up, flag is up, flag is down, Caesar returns to camp. It's like a 30-second sequence.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good. All the money goes into, like, set dressing, and not a lot for stuntmen. And shipbuilding, yes. The ships are continuously impressive in Rome, the series.
The bathtub ships.
And, I mean, to continue, in each of these episodes, really, has Pharsalus being the worst, but they each skimp on battles. Like, Caesarion will revisit the passage of time in Rome shortly, but a whole year of Caesar fighting off the Egyptians takes place in that episode, and none of that is seen, besides some guys throwing rocks. And in Utica, the episode begins after the Battle of Thapsus, where there are some elephants lying on the ground, which, you know, let's give Rome credit where it's due. It must have cost something to get an elephant lying on its side, far more than throwing a flag in the dirt. But the battle is over.
Just go to service. We'll take your most sickly elephant.
We'll push him over.
My question is, this show is supposed to be so expensive. I'm still not sure what they're spending their money on. Because there's no awe in what is going on here.
Gotta be the set.
I think it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
I think it's just all of the attention to detail as far as character to character and setting to setting.
Oh, and you think that guy with the giant dick was cheap?
CGI'd.
Yeah, seems like a waste, yeah. But all right.
This is pre-Benjamin Button when the faces of an older man is stuck on Brad Pitt's... No, vice versa. Brad Pitt's face is stuck on an older or younger man's body. And it's more or less the same thing. Yeah, Brad Pitt's dick stuck on, yeah. Stuck on just a man's body, yeah. Just a random dude.
I wish his dick was
He's
stuck
a greedy, a greedy individual. Yeah,
I thought you were about to say. I thought you were about to say Brad Dick's face.
Brad Dick's face. Brad Dick face.
Yeah,
that's Brad star stage and screen. Brad Dick face.
Yeah.
I'm not. Yeah. My joke's over. I'm done.
Yeah. If the battle
back to Rome.
If the battle itself is unimpressive, I think the aftermath of those battles is better communicated without it. There's a fair amount of show don't tell in the sense that you understand how Caesar feels about the Battle of Pharsalus. You understand how Pompey is reeling from that defeat. It's far more interested in the character work of these two titans of history than it is in the pilot. It's more interested in how they're reacting than it is with, you know, seeing a guy get a sword through his head or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said for that. And George R. R. Martin, if we're talking about Game of Thrones, often leaves out battle sequences in his books because it's not what he's interested in first and foremost. And I think Rome has a lot of that as well.
Well, again, like, it also goes back, like, if this show is made today, or this is probably season 3. That just happens.
And I think if they had all the time that they wanted, this would be like the end of season 1.
Maybe. I don't know. I feel like there's already been like enough. There's enough stuff to have covered.
Sure. Yes, you know? And we talked last time about how much time goes by between when Pompey leaves Italy and Caesar chases after him. Like, that's a whole year. And Caesar's not doing nothing in that period of time. He's consolidating power in Italy. And then once that is taken care of, he's able to leave and cross the Aegean Sea and go after Pompey. But as far as the show is concerned, that takes place more or less immediately. So you can stretch these things out. You can spend more time on them. But in this first season, when they can do whatever they want, like, it's all very purposeful that they're going to have these handful of episodes where everything is essentially coasting before we get to the big finale, which we won't spoil for Brian. Brutus and Cicero are the only optimists left alive at the end of all this. Pompey gets beheaded on the shores of Alexandria, which is a thing that happened in real life. He waded out from his ship, expected to be welcomed, and was immediately murdered and beheaded. So true to history there. Brutus and Cicero, they surrender to Caesar, and he gives them mercy and rewelcomes them into a Rome that he's going to be completely in charge of now. So no bad blood, but of course we'll talk about this a little later as well. Brian, you had something to add about Caesar?
Yes, I think he is the only character that is just terribly interesting. Like, you're a little unsure of what he's going to do next. He actually has plans for what is going on. You know, he's nice to the guys who he just defeated. Kill him with kindness. I don't know. He is interesting compared to everyone else. Like, all the drama around him, not really that great. He's great, though. Except for his haircut. His haircut is still really bad.
We talked about this in our Women in Men's Worlds trio, our most recently published podcast. Well, not most recently.
About Caesar?
Yeah, we talked about how it's always more interesting, even despite whatever morality exists in an interaction, it's more interesting to watch someone who's doing something versus someone who's doing nothing. Like, it's more interesting to watch a malicious person act than it is to watch a moral person not act. I don't think, like, Cato and Scipio are, like, moral individuals who have, like, the right of history on their side, but they're just content with things continuing indefinitely as they are in Rome, as long as it sticks with their perception of what the Republic used to be and enriches them in the process, which it very much did. And Caesar he's trying to flip the checkerboard over.
I like a lot of characters on here. There's one thing I always did want was more Caesar in the show. And then the actor was in Game of Thrones, I'm like, I would like to see more of this actor.
Vastly underserved.
And
they in Game of Thrones.
Completely wasted him there.
Yeah.
So that's a double whammy.
Doesn't like the cold, apparently, Kieran Hines. Didn't want to film a lot of scenes in Iceland. So we do get to meet a new faction in Caesarion, which is an exceptional episode, I think, that takes place in Egypt.
Yes.
Almost solely in Egypt. We meet the Ptolemies, who are an ancient... Not ancient, but the Ptolemies are descended from Ptolemy the Great, who was one of Alexander the Great's generals, and he was willed Egypt after Alexander died, and they've been ruling ever since. Ptolemy 13 is the child that we see on the throne in Caesarion. A long line of inbreeding has placed him there, and he is currently at war with his sister Cleopatra. Caesar favors Cleopatra, who in turn favors whoever... helps her to stay in power, and this is a vital part of the empire as a big part of Caesar's popularity. And again, we can thank our historical companion on the Rome DVDs. Caesar's popularity was largely based on him giving out free grain to the Romans, and that grain came from Egypt.
Again, guys, buy the DVDs. This guy who's here with us and watches this and just tells us everything, great guy.
I wish he was busier, though. Like, yeah. After he's done, no one else is utilizing his services, so he just wants to hang out and have a beer and stays for dinner, and I don't want to make this guy dinner. Like, it's hard to... He's just been whispering in my ear for, like, 3 hours telling me about the vagaries of Roman politics, and now I got to feed this asshole. Sorry, Gerald, I didn't mean to call you an asshole or anything, but I know you're listening. Again, you don't have a lot of time. You don't have a lot of stuff to do. People don't buy physical media anymore.
The poor saps who didn't listen to our first episode.
You've done all this research for essentially nothing. Like, we appreciate what you do for us, but we have our own lives. And you should
go home, Gerald.
You should find something for yourself to do. So digging further into the characters, we get more Forrest Gumping from Varinus and Pullo.
Hold on, before you get really into this. First of all, I love that you call these guys Forrest Gumping because they're always in the right place at the right time.
Sure.
What trio or duo are these two in history? Like, I kept thinking of like Pinky and the Brain, but they're not Pinky and the Brain because neither one of them is that bright.
Sure. Historical icons, Pinky and the Brain. Yeah. maybe like who are they in culture? Like, who are they in movies or TV or whatever?
Oh, right. Yeah. They're this duo that is, they're Forrest Gump and Forrest Gump Jr., but there's some duo that's like this in pop culture somewhere.
Maybe like Abbott and Costello. You know, they keep meeting these like giants of history, like the Mummy and the Wolfman, who I guess in this show, the Mummy would be Cleopatra and the Wolfman would be,
I don't know. Maybe
who's hairiest? Like, all these Roman people take great care to pull all their body hair out. So.
Lenny and what's his name in Of Mice and Men?
They meet anybody famous in that book?
No, I didn't mean famous. But are you talking about just like who they... I don't know. I'm kind of confused now. But
they don't necessarily have to be somebody that has met a bunch of famous people.
Just like
some duo that people have actually heard of. Because no one's heard of these two. But they're just like in the right place at the right time. All the time.
Forrest Gump is pop culture, standard, yeah. No question.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But surely there's some duo where it's just like the strong man and the guy who thinks a little bit that has a family.
I mean, it's a classic. It's pairing of the stoic and the libertine traipsing around and getting into hijinks.
Yeah, that's exactly how most people would describe that exact words.
You guys are trying to make me feel bad for knowing words.
We're
and it's just not going to work.
We're in a post-intellectual society.
I reject that out of hand. I will be... I'll be hanging on to my SAT English score as I'm being beaten to death with sticks.
Oh, what'd you get?
I want to know now.
What do you think I got?
720.
I'll take the over on that.
For the listener, I'm taking a sanctimonious sip of wine.
You do a little
and
bit
then I'm saying I got an 800.
Wow. Did you study or did you just know?
You still ended up in Evansville.
To like a class, like a Princeton Review type thing.
Yeah, so did I, but I did not get
that. Okay, yeah.
I
was happy with my 650 till a second.
No, that's solid, yeah.
I got a 630 on both. With zero preparation, so I just needed enough to get in Evansville, and then did the trick.
Yeah, I had 620 in math.
I think I got something like that, Brian, the first time, and then I was able to bump up.
Oh, you took it again?
Yeah, I took it twice.
Your family must be rich. We didn't have the money
I paid for that with Arby's money.
Yeah, I illicitly garnished Arby's money.
Whatever, we shouldn't get into that.
I think the statute of limitations is up.
Probably. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the area manager is pretty vindictive, and I know she likes the Mediocre Movie Club. So. So why tempt fate? So back to our Forrest Gumping protagonists. What do they do in these three episodes? They escape a shipwreck, 12 out of like several thousand, I think. And they're two of those 12. I can't remember the exact number that Caesar tells Mark Antony. They wash up on a shore as Pompey's fleeing wagon train is going to the coast. They hold him in custody, and then they let him go. Well, Varinus lets him go. And because Varinus lets him go, Pompey flees to Egypt. Caesar follows. They are then supposed to go catch Cleopatra. They do save her life. And then Pullo probably impregnates her with a baby that Caesar claims as his own. So they're all over the place this week. They don't really do a lot in Utica, but they do enough in these other two in these first two episodes to more than make up for it. Like they earn some time off after so drastically changing history in the show's telling.
Yeah, don't have much else to add to that. I still don't understand how Brian. I don't get how you don't enjoy Pullo and Varinus.
I don't know. They're fine. I just don't. They're the odd couple, Pinky and the Brain, whatever you want to call it. It's just like, what great place are they going to end up in where they won the lottery of landing on the correct island at the right time this week?
In Utica, even though they are not acting as forcefully as they are in Caesarion and Pharsalus, they are being acted upon by more powerful forces than they. Erastus Fulman, in the time that has gone by since Varinus was last working for him as a goon, he has consolidated his power, and he's a big, essentially mob boss now, and he gets on Varinus's bad side. They're about to fight, but they're rescued by Caesar, who wants Varinus to now run for magistrate as a politician, because Varinus is a respected soldier and so on and so forth, and he's got Caesar standing behind him, even if Varinus doesn't, like, politically agree with what's happening. And the other side of that coin is Pullo, who is getting restless in the city. He doesn't really have anything going for him compared to Varinus, who now has a burgeoning political career and a growing family with increasing numbers of slaves. So things couldn't be going better for Lucius Varinus right now.
This part was interesting, but then, of course, it also involved Caesar coming to save the day, and he's interesting. So, I don't know. I like this part, wherever this is going.
Caesar rolling up there is like, thugs are like, whoop, boop, 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 boop.
Yes, the thorough humiliation.
That's the noise they made on their way out the door.
Varanus had about a heart of a challenge as MMC member Drew Landry did today at the polls, running against nobody.
Oh, good for him. I was wondering how that went. I'm glad it went okay.
He did win. He just wants to know how many votes he got.
So good for him.
Congrats, Drew. You're actually doing politics. So I suggest getting Caesar on your side.
I suggest learning how to speak like these Romans do with all of the hand motions.
Yes.
Very deliberate, like the town crier, I guess you would call him. He needs to just watch his scenes over and over again and do what he does. And then I think you'll generate headlines, if nothing else.
Whatever he does with his fingers is great.
Yes. A lot of firm and abrupt motions.
I think with Trump the arms does and shoulders. That. Like he's read that in a book you're supposed to do. Well, someone's read it to him in a book that you're supposed to do.
Sure. He saw Mussolini give a speech once.
Right. And but this guy, the town crier, is above his head. Like he's like dramatic.
Trump's he knows what he's like, doing. I would follow that guy. I would follow that guy to whatever bakery he wants to recommend me to.
Oh yeah.
He knows. Yeah. That guy knows where the good bread is. Town crier or not, whoever's paying him or not, he knows where the good food is.
If that guy was alive today, he would have been incensed by that Brooklyn barbecue taking over the world thing from Twitter this past week.
I can't follow these ever-changing internet.
Oh yeah, you got more focus on Twitter. Did you see that, Brian?
Yeah, I did. I saw the iterations of it. So this is like the plates of food with just like three small things.
Yeah, someone shows like a Lunchable pizza thing, like Brooklyn pizza taking over the world. But the thing is like it was actually like two just gray pieces of meat, no smoke ring on there at all.
You're treating this seriously.
This was a serious thing.
I don't know that it was.
Munchies, which is a fairly reputable food critic source, I guess. I don't know.
That I'm sure it doesn't engage in any.
Yeah.
This is how Twinkies are really made, whatever the fuck.
I don't know.
These are the things that people that work at Wendy's tell you never to eat.
It was an intentional.
Those articles, I'm sure they would never do that.
It was intentional.
A fine and reputable site like Munchies.
Yeah. Someone posted a picture of the guy who actually wrote the article, and the guy looks like he's 12, maybe. It's
okay.
Anyway, so, I'll take Tom Cryer over that guy. That's all. Yeah, you're right. You don't have jowls. You don't get to have barbecue opinions.
What if you have a smoker? I can't. Does that count?
I mean, yeah, that counts. But you're gonna need to get a little more jowly if you're gonna be taking it seriously.
I'm not very jowly, but I feel like I know my smoked meats.
I can't think of a transition from this talk into the upper classes in Rome. So can we talk about the brisket
in my refrigerator and what I should do with that? That's what I'm
curious. Is it done?
About.
Did you make it already?
No, it's just sitting there. It's in a vacuum pack. No. Shane's not familiar with beef. Shane's not a beef guy, so
I don't do as much. I did do a beef chili, an over the top chili.
Speaking of over the top, Octavian fucked his sister.
Okay, all right, yeah.
Yeah, that was weird. That was really weird.
Dumb. I really don't like this. I think it's just soap opera for soap opera's sake. For someone who, you know, likes this aspect of Rome, like the plotting and the backstabbing and the seduction and all that, like the antecedent of all this is like I, Claudius, which is like a BBC miniseries that aired on PBS in maybe the 80s or the 70s, I don't know. Just about Octavian as an adult and his family and the various lines of succession. And this is something that would happen in that. Even though people really like that, I tried watching like three episodes of it and it was just dumb. I thought, like, if you think Rome is chintzy, like, I, Claudius, is chintzy. It's just totally unnecessary. There are big, huge, tremendous things and rumblings happening through Roman society right now. Why does Octavian need to fuck his sister? It's just dumb and pointless, and I hate it.
And then they need to spend just a long time on it rather than just glancing over it. Like, if it's something that happened in history, whatever, mention it.
There's no reason to think
get through it. Okay, well, then, whatever.
No thanks.
Yeah, pointless. We'll revisit this in future sections. So stay tuned for more hot incest talk.
Yeah, I'm brought to you by the guys from Indiana.
We also meet Cleopatra. Again, Gerald, in my ear, telling me about how awesome Cleopatra was. She was, forget being well-educated for a woman of the time, she was well-educated for a man of the time. Ptolemy, her brother, 13th of his line. No other Ptolemy bothered to learn Egyptian. Cleopatra did. she's an impressive individual.
This is like a real person?
Yes, Cleopatra, wow. The real person, learned Egyptian. Wow. Yes. I have never seen this actress in anything else, but I think she's instantly likable. Maybe yes. Not likable, but certainly intriguing.
Yes.
And interesting to look at.
Yeah, I looked up someone. She hasn't really done a lot. Because I looked up the other day and I was like, how do I have not seen this person again? Because she's just fantastic in this. But
this is a BBC production, and I'm sure there are all kinds of BBC television shows that she may or may not be in. Or maybe she just likes the London theater. Who mm-hmm. knows? But yes, a welcome addition to the show. Even if we did skimp over all of the time that was spent in Egypt in one episode. And again, Caesarion is a fantastic episode. I love that episode. That's why my favorite episode of Rome, for the introduction to Cleopatra, for the high-speed political maneuvering. There's just for the prime silliness of Pullo and Varinus in that episode, high quality stuff.
This is the episode where Caesar's yelling at the kid.
Yes.
Is that right?
Oh, yes.
That was weird. Like, it was fine, but it was just, like, out of nowhere. Like, the kid has all the power, and all of a sudden Caesar just starts yelling at him. I know, whatever.
That kid did actually a pretty good job acting. I was impressed.
He's a solid little piece of shit child ruler.
Yeah.
Who was, like, kicking his advisors and using human footstools. Totally buy it. Totally believe it. Last thing, as far as characters, Caesar has unexpected reactions to a lot of what happens in these episodes. Like, in Pharsalus, he returns to camp after the victorious battle, and he's just not very elated by it. It's a very depressing moment. He plays it very sad and resigned that he had to, in his mind, he had to do this to set the Republic right. His gleeful pardoning of Cicero and Brutus, he's very happy to see them again instead of, high-handing them. Like, you guys are losers, and yes, I will accept your pathetic defeat. And then his reaction to Cato's suicide is in the historical record as Caesar reacting very negatively. Like, Cato got in one big win before he died. He shamed Caesar by killing himself. And I think that comes through the show when they're at the play. That is really shitting all over Cato and Scipio, and Caesar is not amused in that moment. So you just never know what he's going to do. Like, he screams at Varinus in the scene where he tells him that Pompey has escaped. And it's just, he's unpredictable. And it gives Kieran Hines a lot to do in these three episodes.
I feel like he's like an athlete. Like a competitive, you know, someone who's competing. But then when the game's over, he's like, all right, well done.
Sure, he's L Driver in Kill Bill. Are you filled with remorse or relief or regret or relief? That's it. Yeah, he wanted to give Cato the chance to be given mercy.
Yeah.
Like Cicero and Brutus. And again, we're gonna talk about that later. So, okay, standout scenes. Brian?
Did I put something on there? I don't have the notes open.
You did. Was Mark Antony playing Mancala? I don't know what that is.
Was he?
I don't know what that is.
It's an African game with like the little circles where you move like your glass pieces around and jump things. You guys have no idea what I'm talking about.
No idea. In what episode was this taking place in?
I don't know. One of the three I watched.
It's been a while since I watched as well. So
I do not remember. I kind of think it's in Caesarion when Caesar is sending him back to Rome. Like, maybe that scene starts as they just finished a game of Mancala. I don't know.
Was Mark Antony in Africa at any point during one of these three episodes? Which Caesarion, episode?
Like the first 10 minutes or so.
All right, I'm gonna look while you're talking.
Okay. Speaking of Caesarion, Pullo getting too stabby with Cleopatra's assassin while she and her body slave are watching him, and it's just a classic comedy moment. When he is just stabbing and stabbing and stabbing and keeps stabbing even after he realizes he should probably stop stabbing and then stabs a little slower and pulls back and smiles at him. Solid comedy routine from Pinky, from old Pinky Pullo.
Yeah. I enjoyed Varinus and Pompey going over the battle of what happened and how they lost.
Sure. Yeah.
Just I thought it was fantastic. Just again, like these guys are like athletes who just leave it on the floor sometimes. Like it is what it is. It's just like we fought. It's over. Here's what happened. Let's draw it up.
Sure. In a scene where Pompey is totally getting one over on Varinus by he gives Varinus some of his dignity in exchange for letting him or for convincing him that he should let him go. Like he whistles to himself in a pretty blunt cap on that scene. Like Pompey is obviously not as upset about this as he led Varinus to believe, but still a good performance from the actor whose name I do not remember at the moment. I enjoyed how Antony and Cicero's rivalry kind of comes to a head in this episode, in the sense of not anything actually happening, but in the sense that it's just very clear what the stakes are. Like, Antony doesn't have to dance around and be politic about anything anymore. He can tell Cicero nakedly that if you go against us again, I'm going to cut your hands off and nail them to the Senate door. So we'll put a pin in that. We'll see what happens. Maybe it's Cicero that nails Antony's hands to the Senate door. Huh. Who knows? Who knows what happens?
Gerald, we know that you know. Calm down, buddy.
Gerald just showed up, and I will not let him enter the podcast because his voice is disconcertingly high, like that Seinfeld episode that takes place in the PBS drive. It's odd. It's odd. I mean, there is a reason that the default option on the Rome DVDs is just text.
Yeah.
But I, being a loyal subject, HBO paid for the deluxe package that included high talking Gerald.
Yeah,
I don't regret it yet, but
I can't wait till you move out.
I mean, I wasn't going to tell Gerald that I was moving out, but again, he is sitting here and he just heard you say that. So now I have no chance, no choice, but to take him with me. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Shane. I look forward to more women's voices coming out of a very hairy man. Last thing I like as far as scenes, just a general trend in the show. I don't know why, but I really enjoy the closeness that powerful men and women in this world have with their body slaves, like Caesar and Pasca and Servilia and her slave and her body slave Elodie and Adia and her Sicilian woman, whose name I don't remember, with the all black. She looks like a nun, essentially, and then Cleopatra and her slave. Obviously, these relationships are deeply, deeply troubled, but I just enjoy it. I really enjoy it. I like how it's a total fiction, but I like how the master is not being a dick to their slave. I don't know why that works on me.
Yeah.
Like that it works on me, but it does.
I love these relationships as well. But, I mean, you can't be an effective ruler or the actor in something and not be a good decision maker and someone who listens. You have to be someone who listens to somebody. Right, so like all the people you're just mentioning are pretty effective in what they do, and they all have these body slaves that they at least somewhat respect.
I think in a lot of cases, with the exception of Adia, because the Sicilian woman does not really say anything to her, but like Pasca is very much a trusted advisor and also someone who was wholly owned by Caesar. So it's just a very strange relationship. Like, and there is certainly precedent, like in history at this time for this. Rome had utterly conquered Greece by this point, and all these slaves are Greek because that was like the seed of intelligence in the world at this period of time. So I certainly wish it was more equal. Obviously, the relationship like could just be, you know, instead of like being completely absent of bodily autonomy, like I'm sure Caesar would compensate a trusted advisor well. But instead, Pasca is a slave, and like the show just lets that relationship sit out there, and it's odd, but it works. So our favorite segment, Time Makes No Sense in Rome.
Hold on, I found it.
What did you find again? Because we forgot what you were talking about.
At the 11:20-ish mark in episode 8, I'm pretty sure Mark Antony has a Mancala game board in front of him. And okay. Caesar's in the room, so they may have been playing this game together. Hmm. So, there you go.
I gotta say, I gotta assume that Caesar would probably win any game he's playing against Mark Antony. Except maybe, like, fist fighting. Or Shepherd fucking. In the game of Shepherd fucking, I think Mark Antony might have the upper hand. Yeah. But. So, time makes no sense in Rome. As far as the actual events, Pharsalus, the Battle of Pharsalus, takes place in the spring of 48. And Thapsus takes place in winter of 46. And then probably a few more months go by. So, episode 9 ends, and we'll say spring of 46. So, 2 years go by in these two episodes.
Sure.
Whatever. We see that baby Lucius is older, but Verena the younger is exactly the same age by all appearances. I think with Verena the older, she can hide it better just because after you pass, you know, a certain point, there's like a wide variety of ages you could be. But Verena the younger is obviously like 10 or 11, maybe. And she is still 10 or 11 by the end of episode 9, despite all this time going by. Octavia is still unmarried. I think that really sticks in my craw. No one is even talking about it. Someone like Agia, who has this very powerful chip card in her deck, is just not taking advantage of it. And it seems very much not like her, and everyone is just hand-waving it away.
I
no
guess,
one cares.
To be fair, it's kind of like hard. Who are you going to marry her to? Who are you gonna...
Whoever you want. Literally anybody.
But don't you want to wait to the right to play it politically? I mean... Caesar's losing at the beginning of this, and then he's winning. So
he's winning in the spring of he's won in the spring of 48. It's essentially over.
So 2 years have gone by
in between then and now. And like her husband died in I want to say 49 in the show at least. So yeah, like 3 years for a woman who is I don't know like 21, 22, mm-hmm. who is you know not married. I don't know what the actual Octavia was doing in this time. Maybe they fudged her age because it was very important for her to have sex with her brother. Maybe she was married this entire time. I don't know. I need to check my sources. Shut up, Gerald. We'll figure it out later. Last thing, as far as time makes no sense in Rome, between, even when they're not bound by the historical record, Varinus's first two scenes in Utica, one where he is just returning, very heartfelt reunion, second, in which he is reenacting a battle, probably the Battle of Thapsus. I think it is the Battle of Thapsus against Cato and Scipio. Very aggressively yelling and shouting and cursing in front of his children and making his cuckold son cry. A month has gone by between those two scenes. And those two scenes take place within like the first 10 minutes of the episode. So, again, time makes no sense in Rome. Things happen so fast.
Sure.
So fast. So our next segment, Rome is an Alien Civilization. Servilia spends the bulk of episode 9 enacting a long scheme to get dirt on Caesar through Octavia, who she has seduced. Octavia gets back with her about rumors that Caesar has been having sex with Octavian. And Servilia shrugs, like, who gives a shit? I have reasonably powerful accusations that the leader of the Roman world, uncontested, has been banging his underage nephew. But what I really want to know is, does he have seizures?
Yeah.
So, again, they're really sticking with this thread of, we just don't care about that. No one gives a shit. And they keep reminding the audience of it. I think it's effective, just for showing, again, Rome is an alien civilization. Pompey's children, when they're fleeing, they yell out to their mother, look, mama, dead people, when they see Titus Pullo and Lucius Farinas. I feel like this is something that Roman children are saying all of the time to their parents every day, in that dead people are essentially the pigeons of the Roman world.
Yeah.
And that they're just lining the streets. So what? I saw a dead person today.
I imagine it's like my toddler saying, Daddy, I peed. Yeah, yep, you do that every day, multiple times.
Yeah, I saw a dead person today.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
Yeah.
Lastly, for this segment, unless you guys have something, Varina's casually telling Pullo that the dead men on the beach that the dead men on the beach are too far gone to have their blood drank for sustenance. And he just says it so matter-of-factly and nonchalantly. Like, there was a period of time where we could have drank their blood. That period is over. Now we have to think of something else.
I love Verinus. It's a great character.
Yes, and just more with that shipwreck scene. Pullo asks him to write on the rock that he's scrawling on his last will and testament. You know, say hello to a rainy for me. And Verinus just casually, again, saying back, I will if there's room. They're back and forth. Beautiful. It's fantastic.
Pinky in the brain. They'll do it for you.
And our final segment, Romans are just like us. We mentioned incest earlier. In Rome, as today, as in most of nature, incest is a serious taboo and a crime. And the punishment, no matter who you are, including if you're the great nephew of the dictator of Rome, is a compelled suicide. You would have to either throw yourself or be thrown off of the Tarpeian Rock, which was a tall cliff on one of the seven hills of Rome. So Adia is right to flip out for many reasons.
Even worse reason to have that happen at all. Game of Thrones, okay, it makes sense. Incest just happens all the goddamn time.
It certainly happens in this part of the world, or in this time period as well. Like we did mention the Ptolemies. It's right. Just an act of supreme hubris. And I mean, it's not...
I'm saying again, not a good plot point. It doesn't make any sense.
Agree, completely.
So it would have made more sense in Game of Thrones.
Yes, it makes Octavian stupider.
Game of Thrones is much better at incest.
Yeah, can't argue with that. Also, Octavian is a deist before such things existed, most likely. The show giveth and the show taketh away with Octavian. He is someone who can be talked into fucking his sister, but he's also one of the handful of people in this world who can realize that maybe I don't have to say a prayer to the God of Doors when I leave a room.
I never thought he was actually talked into sleeping his sister. I thought that was something he just felt like he wanted to do. He's like, oh,
sure,
he's trying
but
to
I
manipulate
think,
me.
But she had to propose it.
Yeah, he let her.
Yeah,
he wasn't talked into it.
Whatever, it takes two to commit a crime against nature.
Sure.
Octavian's religious stance is despite his appointment as an augur. So maybe we'll be seeing more of the chief augur and his delightful ways in the future, because Octavian works for him now, even though he thinks it's pointless and boring and useless.
Like all millennials in their first jobs.
Sure. Anything else? On these episodes. Again, Caesarion is exceptional. One of the best episode of the series, which makes it one of the better things that HBO's done. Pharsalus, despite the lack of a battle, despite much action in it, still has a lot of strong character stuff and is an effective farewell for Pompey the Great. And Utica, you know, has its moments.
Do we have any clue how long Pinky and the Brain were on that island? There's that part of the
no
time
sense
makes
of it.
No sense.
Yeah. Time makes no sense of it.
That's long what I not to drink blood.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
They didn't have anything to drink or eat, so it could not have been long. But at the same time, they probably left Rome months before the battle happened, because at the start of that episode, we see Caesar like on his last legs, and which is accurate in the historical record. Like, if Pompey had just starved Caesar out, then he would have eventually collapsed and would have won. For whatever reason, the show surmises that out of honor and acclaim in Rome, you can't just starve your enemies out; you have to defeat them in battle, and that led to his downfall. But a lot of time would have had to go by for Caesar to get to that point. So who knows? Like, this is something that Game of Thrones gets in trouble with too, where one timeline is happening at a different pace than another timeline. And you just have to shrug your shoulders and move on. So we'll be back in the coming weeks with a wrap up to season one. Stay attached to our feed for all kinds of fun episodes that we've been putting out. We just recorded a What Have You Been Watching episode that heavily featured talk about Annihilation and Black Panther on our website. We'll be posting shortly a review of Lo and Behold, Reveries of the Connected World, in which Werner Herzog chronicles the history of the internet and its pluses and minuses. I'm about a half an hour into it, and I just love hearing that man talk about anything and everything. So, my review is going to be relatively positive, if only because Werner Herzog is the shit. And we'll be following that up with Nobody Speak, a documentary about Hulk Hogan and Gawker, and Audrey and Daisy about teen cyberbullying, I believe. Again, I'll figure what that movie is about before I watch it.
And with my recent Oscar win. I should be figuring out something for John. Probably some punishment. I don't know why it has to be directed towards John.
It does.
I
mean, you can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, we still need to pod Transformers the movie. I need to find my DVD and watch it for like the 60th time.
It is coming up in my review hopper because I watched that in November. Yeah. So we can talk about it before that, or we can talk about it concurrently, or whatever you want to do. You're the prize winner.
Yay!
Like us on Facebook at Munich Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter at Munich Movical. iTunes reviews, Amazon, standard disclaimer. Thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
See ya.
Have a good night.